So the first concern about today's topic about advice giving is this danger of Gladys Kravitz of business minding. So there is a Gemara in the beginning of Bava Basra that gives us this first concern. You know, before you go around snooping in other people's business trying to give them advice, the Gemara has a discussion here about what happens when people who jointly own a property or who own adjacent properties, they have to provide a certain measure of protection when they divide the property. So two people are neighbors, and they need to divide the property along the property line, and they have to make some kind of demarcation. So the Gemara's discussion is, well, what kind of demarcation is required? Do you require just an indication that this is where my property line ends and yours starts? Or do you actually need a wall, a physical barrier that would block not just, you know, casual intrusion, which would be called mesipis, like little stones that would indicate this is the end of my property, the beginning of yours, or no, do you actually need a wall? Well, why would you require a wall? So the Gemara says there's such a thing called hezek re'ia, damage through sight. That's the concept. Now, a while ago, we spoke about the importance of privacy, which is a separate concern from hezek re'ia, meaning later on the Gemara discusses that if I have a house right next to your house in the chatzer and you have a window, I can't open my window right next to your window because then my window can look into your window. That's a violation of privacy. But here there's a different idea. Hezek re'ia. Now, what is hezek? The word literally means damage through sight. The question is, what does that mean? So the Gemara says on page 1, in this discussion about hezek re'ia, in the bracketed section, now, when it comes to a gina is different than a sada. A sada is like a grain field or a field where I'm planting an orchard. That's like a business, a commerce center. It's out somewhere. But a gina, that's my backyard vegetable garden. So the din is that just like when it comes to splitting a field, you have to have this demarcation. So there's a discussion here about a gina, which is a vegetable garden, meaning it's generally adjacent to my house. It's more of a private space. So the Gemara says, v'chim begina. And the Gemara says also you have to put up a wall around between your gina, your garden, and the next guy's gina. Why? No, Gemara says gina shiny. It's different than the usual case. Kid Rabbi Abba, the teaching of Rabbi Abba, which is Rabbi Abba Amar Rav Huna Amar Rav. Rabbi Abba said the name of his teacher. Rav Huna said the name of his teacher. Rav said Aser la Adam Lamod Besada Chaveira Besada Chaveiro B'Shashihi Omedes Bekomoseha. You're not allowed to stand next to your neighbor's field when it's full of grain. So much so that this idea is raised in a Gemara in the end of Bava Metzia regarding, the Gemara has a discussion, where's the best place to buy a field? Is it good to buy a field close to your house, so it's not such a schlep to go there when you go out? And then the Gemara says, maybe it's not a good idea, because if you buy it close in the neighborhood, you're going to have all the entas standing around looking at your field. So what's the problem? What's the big deal to have somebody standing around looking into your field? So look at what Rashi says on the left side in the underline. Aser la'adam shiyamod, shelo yazikenu ba'ayin ra'a. He should not damage the person with what we call an ayin hara. So this sent me on a little bit of a goose chase last week, because I've heard this many, many times. And at a certain point last week, I was just like, okay, so we have to get to the... But what is the story with this ayin hara? Where does this come from? What do the sources have to say about ayin hara? So, one, you could ask a bona fide Kabbalist, not a charlatan Kabbalist, a bona fide Kabbalist, but I didn't have one easily accessible in the last week. So, I went to my shelf, and which was one of the great gifts that I have received. My in-laws, instead of getting me a watch when we got engaged, bought me a set of rare books called Asbaklaria, which I was able to procure only through a backdoor book dealer in Israel, in Bnei Brak, because it's out of print, who got me almost all the volumes of Asbaklaria, which was a tremendous gift. So Asbaklaria, there's a guy in Switzerland, I don't know if he's still living, who undertook a Herculean effort to collect primary sources and arrange them according to topic in Machshava, a Jewish philosophy, not in Halacha. So it's a very unique work. So any topic that you have, let's say, Eitz Hadas, he will give you, he has a list of about 40 books that he went through, and I think he did this before the advent of computers, and he somehow now with computers, he got not just the citations of these books, he got the original sources and collected them all, and the encyclopedia is 31 volumes. So I Xerox for you on the next page. This is one piece of an entry of the Asbaklaria, which I have. Unfortunately, in our first flood, when we moved here, I lost a couple of volumes, but most of them were replaced. I still have only one that's missing. So I looked under Ayin Hara, Ayin Ra. What is he going to say? What does that mean? So there is a comment that's shared by the Abarbanel and the Malbim about an Ayin Hara, which explains one perspective. Now, generally, I would have liked to see in the original, but I thought it was interesting just for you to see what the page looks like. You can see how he just goes methodologically from the early sources to the later sources. So Abarbanel, which is on the top right-hand column in the circle, so Abarbanel is living in the 15th century in Spain, and then the Medrash Shmuel, Maharal, now you're already in 17th century, Rav Moshe Chaim Luzzatto, so you're in 16th century in Italy, Malbim, you're a little bit later in Germany, he just goes, and then Hamikdavar, Netziv, 20th century, 21st century, Michtav Me'elio. He just goes all the way from the beginning. Tanakh, all the Talmud, Zohars, everything. It's a tremendous work. Tremendous work. The Swiss guy, I forget his name. So he quotes Abarbanel here, but it's not a citation. This is, he gives you the full text on the top right. V'yadua sha'ayin mazika. You should know that your eye can hurt someone. How? Al yedei eide hamosaros ha'arsiyim hayotzim mimena. Interesting. The edim are steam. I mean, in modern day Hebrew, we translate edim are steam. That your eye, when you look at someone, the gaze and the steam, that is arsiyim. Eris is poisonous. So he understood that there was some kind of dangerous chemical that could be emitted from your eye. V'chein b'nafash ha'afat. He compares it, the analogy is to the venom of a snake. How about that? Look at the bottom left where it says Malbim, Reb Meir Leibush, living in Germany, a couple of centuries later. Similar idea on the second section. Inyan ayin hara, hu kasher birubam hativiyim. As the naturalists have explained, what? Ki mibal nefesh hakanoi, when there is a person who is jealous, Bahabito aldavar, when he looks at something, yotzim min eino hara, nitzotzos roos ve'edim arsim, min harosoros asher tidochem hateva v'shorosham bevchisus hanefesh hakanoi hamabit. That's what he thought. That if you look upon something with a jealous eye, you literally have some kind of negative energy, some kind of sparks of poison that you're actually able to somehow damage someone else's property. And that's why the Gemara says that a person should not stand next to somebody else's field when their field is full of grain, because the person's going to feel jealous of them, he's going to feel negative, and by feeling negative and looking and kind of like gazing carefully in this negative way at their field, they will become damaged. That's one approach to Ayin Hara. Another approach is on page 3. This he quotes, but I went to the original page to get the whole thing. This is the Michtav Me'elio. Rav Elio Dessler was the founder of the great yeshiva in Gateshead in England, and then he went to become the Mashgiach in the Ponovitch yeshiva in Bnei Brak. He died, must have been in the 60s or 70s, I think. So here he has, in the beginning of the fourth volume of the Michtav Me'elio, a discussion about the Tov Ayin, which is a Midah Pirkei Avos, a person has a good eye, looks at the good in things, and then he talks about Ayin Hara. And then he has a conversation here on the bottom left about Pu'ulas Ayin Hara. How does an Ayin Hara work? So I was like, all right, this is what we're looking for. Lefnei harbe shanim, many years ago, he says, Bi'arnu, we explain, Shepu'ulas Ayin Hara, Mushreshes Be'uvda, Shenafshos Kol B'nei Yisrael, Kshuros Umu'uros Zubazu. It's predicated on the notion that all human beings, and specifically in this time context, all Jews have a soul. A soul means a spark of godliness, but that spark of godliness is essentially shared among all Jews. Everybody has like a little piece. What's that?
It's the Borg.
What's that?
Anybody know Star Trek?
People? I was never into Star Trek. The Alter Rebbe, the Shulchan Aruch Rav, in the Tanya, the easiest place to remember this is it's in Perek Lamed Beis, because it's the lave of the Tanya. He says all Jews are neshama achas begufim mechulakim. All Jews are one soul, just split up in a lot of different people. But really, from a soul standpoint, we're all together. So therefore, says Rav Dessler, wait a second. If all our souls are interconnected, we all have the same root, and they're all interwoven, v'chayeim tuluyim ze beze b'shorsham haruchani. All the root of our existence, of our life, meaning our neshamas, it's all connected to each other. V'im echad, last line, mekani b'chavero, and somebody, if someone is jealous of their friend, ve'eno tsaralo, and they look at that person negatively, hainu, that means, she'etzem mitziuso shel chavero matrida, next page, page 4, oso, that meaning, the person who's next to me, their essence, their whole being, it bothers me. Vahoya rotza l'roso b'kol ra, and I want to see that person's demise. Now, it sounds very exaggerated, but we do that when we're jealous. We don't want to see them, you know, fall off a cliff. We'd feel bad if we gave somebody an ayin hara and they literally fell off a cliff the next day. But we don't want to see them so successful. That's the midah of ayin ra, as opposed to ayin tova, right? Ayin tova is a gracious eye that says, you know, you have it good, gevaldik. Let it be good for you. Let it be good for everybody. So he says, Oz, then, second line, B'mida v'chaye chavero tuluyim bo kanal, since to the measure in which the spiritual existence of that person is interconnected with my spiritual existence, as we explained, yitachein v'yuchal ligrom al yedei zeh l'ma'et mechavero shefa hachayim. By being negative, diminishing the soul, the collective soul, in specifically relating to that person could have their soul capacity diminished because our souls are interconnected. And therefore, umemela, through that, yoser olul lenizakim ula ason. They could be more vulnerable to damage and to catastrophe. Now, this speaks to an idea. It's difficult for us to comprehend because we live in such a physical world, such a material world, and especially such a technologically advanced world where we see cause and effect very superficially. But if we believe that the Ribbono Shel Olam, the master of the universe, is taking care of everything, so then the concept of spiritual cause and effect is out there. We just don't think about it. We don't have the calculus to explain it. But the idea that there is a spiritual existence beyond what we see, that's really what's underlying this. And that's why, you know, there's a discussion about cursing other people, Rahman Litzlan, right? There's an Issa D'Oraisa, so you're not allowed to curse someone. Now, what it means to curse them, that's a whole discussion of itself, with God's name, not God's name, whatever it is. But so the Rishonim discuss, what's the big deal about cursing somebody? So there's a debate. Some say, you know what, cursing someone is just bad midos. You know, it's bad midos to curse someone. But others say, no, no. By invoking the power of the speech, expression of your soul, you have the ability to spiritually damage that other person. And for some people, that sounds crazy because we live in a practical world, but if we understand that we live also or primarily in a spiritual world, then sometimes we don't realize we have to be so careful, and this is, I would say, an important takeaway, we have to be careful what we say. Because like the Gemara says about tzaddikim, even if they say something by accident, Yaakov Avinu, according to the Medrash, he said unwittingly, whoever stole the trufim, so they're going to have an early demise. And who was it? It was Rachel, and that's the way it was, because that's what he said. So we have to realize that, especially when it comes to speech, hafla is the amazing, wondrous thing about human beings, so it's careful. It's something we need to be careful about. So that would be the first thing I would say about, before giving advice, I would say be careful when getting involved in other people's business because sometimes it can border on ayin hara type of thing, and we have the potential nisayon of not being sar ayin, about being negative about somebody else. Yeah.
I just wanted to mention that what I was describing you hold with the cursing aspect because I personally know someone who hired someone to curse an opponent in court.
So some people are into that.
And also of someone who stabbed, in Israel, who stabbed a policeman for giving him a ticket, was a Sephardi policeman, and he said, I will hear someone curse you. the bad girl.
Does that work with the Skokie Police Department?
I don't know. Maybe if you have Sparty Police.
Okay. Good. Okay.
You might be able to. Yeah, so you might get into more trouble.
That's right.
You better believe.
So that's on the caution side. But here's the other side, which is, on the other hand, it's a good thing to give advice. Why is it a good thing to give advice? Because the reason we give advice is because we want to help people. And there is a requirement, there is actually a requirement from the Torah to help people in whatever way possible. So the Gemara tells us on page 5. The Gemara says, Gufa. Yeah, sure.
So, essentially what you're saying, I mean, you can do anything. You have a black and blue kippah, and maybe I'm jealous of your black and blue kippah. And it has nothing to do with you standing in your
absolutely
and having a wonderful field.
That's true.
So, but that's human nature.
So
you can't negate human nature by just saying, don't do it.
Right. So I think there are two aspects of this. One is, that's why the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says, you need to work on a tov ayin, because you're right. You could fall into an ayin hara in any circumstance. Yet, the rabbis identified key junctures of places where they say, you know what? This is very likely that a person would fall into an ayin hara. Like the Gemara says in Brachos, you take a young adolescent guy and you have him hang out in the red. The Gemara says this. I didn't say this. The Gemara says in the beginning of Brachos, you have an adolescent guy and you have him hang out for a while in the red light district. What do you expect from that guy? Nothing. You know that's what's going to happen. That's where he is. So you should avoid that circumstance. So if you know there's a particularly high likelihood of somebody getting involved in ayin hara, so the rabbis say stay away. They don't say walk around with your eyes on the floor. They say don't stand next to somebody, you know, whose field is very successful, because that's human nature to be jealous of what they have. So I think it's a balance. It's inoculation in the sense that we're going to go through life, we need to learn the midah of an ayin tova, but also insulation, not put ourselves in a situation where we're going to be jealous of other people. We need to work our own midahs, but also to keep a distance when we know that we're going to, you know, somebody else has a particular car, and I'm very jealous of that car. You know, so then you shouldn't drive by their house when their car is parked in the parking lot, because you're going to feel a sense of, obviously the Ibn Ezra says you got to work on your midos. You have to work on the violation of los achmod or los asave. But also, it's foolish to think that you're going to drive by their house every day and you're always going to be going like this, you know, checking out, did they shine the car today? Did they not shine the car today? Leave it alone. Leave it alone. Don't look at their car so much. I think that's the balance. We need to do both.
I don't know.
That's exactly. The envy brings the ayin hara, because, you know, I want that car, and then people who have bad midos, I can't speak for anybody else here, but sometimes maybe I have this bad midah, and you're like, the next thing is, after I want that car is, you know what, I wish he didn't have that car. Or, you know, it's really wrong. It's really, that whole situation, the car, it's terrible, and I wish that car would fall into the next sinkhole, you know? I'm not saying that I ever thought that, but
that's the driver's part.
Right.
I don't understand the connection, the theory from Rav Dessler that this is all because we're all kind of one interconnected. It seems to me that ought to cut the other way, in the sense that people ought to be less likely to be jealous of or...
Kavali.
If it's because, oh, we're all one interconnected soul.
So that's the other thing. I think this relates to what you were alluding to, which is, in a certain sense, it's the opposite. We actually had a group, we had a Yom Iyun for the Academy students a couple of weeks ago, and the theme of the Yom Iyun was on the concept of Machlokas L'Shem Shamayim. So they had asked me to speak to the whole group. They showed a little trigger film, and then they asked me to speak to everybody, and then we broke out into the different groups. So I told them a story, which was a fictional story, that one Friday night, I was holding the challah cover, the challah knife in my right hand, and I accidentally, because I'm right-handed, I cut my left hand with my challah knife. And then I took my left hand and I slapped my right hand because I had cut it with my right hand. Right? Doesn't that make a lot of sense? So I'm not sure how many of the students realized that was a mashal. But that's the Talmud Yerushalmi. The Talmud Yerushalmi says, if all Jews are one organism, so how could it be that one Jew, that's the discussion there is lo sikum v'lo sitor, you're going to take revenge? It's like your left hand slapping your right hand after you accidentally cut yourself. So that's where the Baal Tanya is getting it from. That's the reverse side. The reverse side is illogical to be a Sona Yisrael. It's illogical to be jealous of somebody else. I'm not jealous of my kids. I'm not jealous of, you know, so that's the appropriate side. On the other hand, of course, the dark side is that because we are interconnected, that's how I have the ability to affect somebody else. Because if I'm diminishing my soul by being a person of bad midos, my soul is becoming diminished. Well, if my soul is somehow connected to their soul and I'm channeling the diminishment of my soul vis-a-vis them, so then they also become diminished. It's a quite an interesting... I never heard of this until last week. Seriously. Yeah.
in a lot of the city-states of what was to become Italy in the Renaissance, the rabbis passed these sumptuary laws. Asked, you know, how much jewelry you could wear in public, how much fur, because they did not want to arouse the envy of the people.
On Einheim, huh? Yeah. So let's talk about the positive.
The Gemara says... The dress code.
Okay. Gufa, says the Gemara, minayin leroe es chaveiro. How do you know that if you see your friend, shu tovea benohar, if he's drowning in a river, o chaya goroso, or he's being mauled by an animal, o listin boimalov, or he's being attacked by bandits, shehu chayav lahatzilo, they're obligated to save that person. Talmud lomar, as it says in the pasuk, lo samar al dam reyacha, do not stand by on the blood of your fellow. So this is true, the Gemara is saying it in a very immediate concept of, I see somebody, they're drowning, so I'm mechuyev to throw them a life preserver. But then the Gemara says, really, why do I need that pasuk? Vaha mehacha nafka, is that the source of it? Mehasam nafka, I learned it from somewhere else. The word nafka means to take out, meaning I derive this concept from a different pasuk. What's that? Avida's guf ominayin. How do I know that I need to help somebody else's guf, somebody else's body that's being lost? Talmud lomar, as it says in the pasuk, vahashevo solo. I return it to him. What's the context there? Hashavas aveda, meaning the person's lost property. So the Gemara says, ime hasam, had it been from there, hav amina halim bi lebin nafshe. Avo mitrach umegar aguri emolo kamash malon. Had that been the source, I would have thought that if I see somebody's lost donkey or lost car or lost keys, I have to return it to them, but I don't have to get someone else to help me return it to them. Kamash malon, I have to get someone else to help me return it to them. That's the end of the Gemara. But where's the missing step here? What does the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda have to do with helping the guy who's drowning? What's that? Right! It's a kol shekein. There's some Latin word for that, lamdas. It's obvious. If I have to return his wallet, so if he's losing his life, of course I have to return it to him. That's why the Gemara says, I didn't even need the pasuk of Mosaman al Dam Reyacha. If I see something bad is happening, is potentially going to happen to somebody else, of course I'm a chuyev to step in. Not just because of the law of Mosaman al Dam Reyacha. I would have known it already from the chiyev asay of Ahashivo Solo. So I would say this is the makar for good advice. You see somebody, they're going to buy a house, they're going to make an investment, they're going to buy a car, they're going to confront their in-laws, whatever they're going to do. And it could be potentially hazardous, especially the last category. So they have a mitzvah of Hashiv Osolo. They have a mitzvah, you have a mitzvah to help them out. That's why the Gemara has also an expression of mavriach ari minichsei chaveiro. It doesn't mean literally an ari, a lion, is at my next door neighbor's backyard about to, you know, bite his dog. It's an expression. That's the expression. Mavriach ari, to chase away a lion, minichsei chaveiro, from my friend's property. If I see something bad is going to happen to my neighbor, I'm a chuyev to step in. I should help him out. So too here. If I know that somebody is going down the path and they're going to make a big, huge mistake, so l'chura, I would think, I'm a chuyev to give them advice, right?
What if you're in danger?
Oh, so that's a great question. So this is a much larger discussion. Actually, on Tuesday night, when we have the medical halacha shiur, that's going to be a big piece of the puzzle. How much risk do you have to take on for yourself? You know, if I see somebody drowning in the pool, and I'm not a trained lifeguard, unfortunately, in many cases, what happens, Rahman al-Islam, the people who go in to save the person who is struggling in the water,
they drown
themselves. So then it becomes a shaila. Are you mechuyev to put yourself at risk? So the Pesach Yeshuv in the end of Choshe Mishpat quotes three opinions on that question. Some say it's forbidden, one is not permitted. Some say it's an obligation. Others say it's permitted, but not obligatory. Same thing kind of comes for...
Don't. Here's your answer.
Sounds like take-home.
That's a long... So it depends. You have to ask your local postage. But the same thing comes up for donating kidneys. You know, the same shiloh with donating organs like kidneys. You know, there's an element of risk. How much risk? These kind of things. These are all... big shilas. These are all very, very complicated shilas. But there is a very important counterbalance to this idea that I think comes from the pasuk of Ahashivosol of giving people good advice, is that it has to be good advice. Because there is another potential, and that is on page 6. And that is not good advice.
Who judges?
And but so that actually is a subjective. Well, I'll explain in a second. The pasuk says like this. We spoke before about cursing, not cursing people. Lo sakal ol cheresh. Don't curse a deaf person. And the Gemara darshins why it has to be. It specifically says a deaf person can't hear you, curse them. But the Gemara says even everybody you can't curse. But they formulate specifically that even though a deaf person can't hear you, you shouldn't curse them either. Fine. Velifnei iver lo sitei mechshol. And before a blind person, do not put a stumbling block. V'yareisa me'alokecha ani Hashem. And you should have a measure of awe, of reverence, of fear for God. I am Hashem. So what does that pasuk mean when it says, V'lifnei iver lo sitei mechshol? So I would have thought, when I read the words the first time, is if there was a blind man walking down Dempster, I shouldn't take a cinder block and put it in front of him. But it could be that that's not actually what the pasuk means. Take a look on the next page. This is the Sifra. The Sifra... on page 7. The Sifra is also referred to as the Toras Kohanim. It's a Medrash Halacha on Sefer Vayikra. So Medrash Halacha says on this pasuk, Lifnei iver lo sitei mechshol. Before a blind person, do not put a stumbling block. Lifnei suma bedavar. He adds one word that changes the whole meaning of the pasuk. Before a blind man, bedavar, in a matter. He explains. Ba amar lecha. A man comes to you and says, Bas ish ploni, the daughter of such and such a person. Ma hi lekahuna. Is she allowed to marry a kohen? Al tomer lo kshera v'hi eina ela psula. Don't say that that woman is permitted to marry a kohen when in fact she's not. Hayanotel memcha eitza. He comes to ask you for advice. Al titin lo eitza she'eina hogenes lo. Don't give him advice that's not suited for that person. Al tomer lo. Don't say to him, Tzei b'hashkama, go out, go work early in the morning. Sheyakapchu listim, because the gangsters who are waiting for him are going to get him. Don't tell him when to go out when he's going to get robbed. And seibat saharayim, go in the evening. Bishvil sheyishtarev, so he'll get sunstroke. You know, if you tell somebody to go out in the heat of the day, let's say they're living in Miami or something, you tell them go do manual labor at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and they're an immigrant. They get off the boat. They don't know anything better. So that's the Medrash is saying. They're a summa bedavar. They're blind in this area. The guy doesn't know when. He just got off the boat. Al tomar lo. Don't say to him, mechor es sotcha. Here's an eitzah. Sell your field, v'kach lecha chamor. Buy instead a donkey. And then what do? Next page. Va'at okif olav v'not lahimenu. So then what do? You go around the side, you circumvent, and you buy it. People are involved in business. That's the last, what has been going on in America for 5-10 years. People are talking about this. People giving aids to Shane O'Genis, encouraging people to take loans or to do business deals that were not aids O'Genis low. They tell them, buy this type of financial product. And then they're okay if they go and sell it to somebody else when they know that it's not the best thing for them. Shema Tomar, maybe you'll say, Eitza Tova needs no sinlo. I'm giving him good advice. Good advice. Vahare Hadavar Master Leif. And this is the clincher, says the Medrash, why the end of the pasuk is the way it is. Because it's something that no one else knows. It's only in your heart. Shenemar, as it says, V'yareisa me'elokecha ani Hashem. You should fear God, because I am God. I am omniscient. Nobody will ever be able to prove in a court of law whether or not you had malfeasance in mind. No one can ever prove that, because no one can ever get into your head. They can read your emails, and they can read documents, and they can discuss things that you said, but no one can ever know what's in your mind. When you told that person to sell this or buy that, you gave them that piece of advice, anytime it says in the Chumash, I shouldn't say anytime, generally it says, it's something that only the Ribbono Shel knows. And so when it comes to Lifnei Iver, only the Ribbono Shel knows. So this actually becomes a discussion, the poskim. This seems like from the Torah's Kohanim, this is the primary, the word pshat, pshuto shel mikra, doesn't mean the literal translation of the verse. It means the primary intent of the verse. And then there are multiple layers of interpretation. Another one of the multiple layers of interpretation is the whole idea of not helping somebody violate an aveira. Right? There's a nazir, and the nazir wants to drink wine. Well, a nazir is prohibited from drinking wine. Well, if I give the nazir a cup of wine, I am an accessory to his aveira, so I shouldn't do that. But that is the case where the nazir, he knowingly and willingly wants to violate the aveira. That's another thing. That's an extra level of interpretation. This seems like, from the Sifra, and if you look on page 9, this is actually how the Sefer HaChinuch of Rav Aharon Halevi, well, I shouldn't say it's attributed by many to Rav Aharon Halevi in Spain, but maybe it's anonymously authored. In Mitzvah Reish Lamed Beis, look at what he says. Shlo lahachshil tam baderech. That's the title of the mitzvah, not to trip up a simple person in the way. But what does that mean? Lo lahachshil b'nei Yisrael lasis lam eitza ra'a. Not to give another Jewish person bad advice. Ela avol niyasher osam kishayishalu eitza. We should straighten them out when they ask for advice. Notice how he says, Kisha Yishalu Eitze. It doesn't say you should go around giving people unsolicited advice. Shenemar, as it says in the Pasuk, V'lefne Ivel Osite Mechshol. So it's so interesting. Says the Minchas Chinuch, now I'm not even sure whether if I put a block, a physical block in front of a blind man, is that actually Lefne Iver anymore? So there's a discussion. The assumption is that it is still Lefne Iver, but the primary... Who ever thought this? Until he saw this Sifri, I would have never known it. The primary violation of Lifnei Iver was when someone gives somebody else bad advice. So we have to be very cautious. Now, it doesn't mean that, notice how the phrase is Eitza Hogenes. So there was a story in Eastern Europe, I forget who it was, that a particular shochet came to the rabbi in the town. He says, I'm applying for a position in such and such a locale. Do you think I should apply for it? And the rabbi says to him, yes, you should definitely apply for it. I encourage you strongly. Go for it. And then, 20 minutes later, a messenger from that particular town came to this rabbi, who that town knew was acquainted with this shochet. And he said to the rabbi, you know, this shochet is interested in applying for our position. Should we hire him? And he said, I don't think you should hire him. I don't think he's up for the job. So what's the pshat? The pshat is like this. You have to give every person the Eitza HaHogenes Lo. You should give every person the advice that's appropriate for them. So for this Shochet, it's good for him. He should apply for the job. He should do his best. He should maybe pursue the job and get extra studying. Maybe if he gets the job and he'll grow into it, he'll be great. So from his perspective, when he was coming to ask the rabbi's opinion if he should apply for the job, the rabbi should encourage him. He should tell him, that's a big step for you. Go for it. Do your best. But at the same time, if the potential employer is coming to him, he has to give him the Eitz Hogenes Lo. He has to tell him what he sees is this person right now. He has to tell him he needs a lot of work. You know, maybe he can grow into it. Do you have somebody who can mentor him, etc.? So the idea of, somebody asked before, who decides what's good advice? It's very subjective, and it always depends on who you're talking to and who you're talking about. So you can have the same circumstance for two different people as a different kind of advice, because you have to give the best advice to the person who's asking you. That's it. But now that comes to the last point when it comes to giving advice, which is the Chavetz Chaim. So the Chavetz Chaim, I started learning a little bit of the Sefer Chavetz Chaim. The Gemara says in Bava Basra that Lashon Hara is one of the things, or Avak Lashon Hara is one of the things that a person trips up with all the time. And It's bad enough that I do enough aveiros, but then I realize giving away all my olam haba by saying lashon hara, it's just not kedai. So I figured start learning some Chavetz Chaim, and maybe it'll make a dent. I'm not sure, but so far I've gotten through klal yud. So when I saw this klal, I said, "Oh, this exactly fits this question of trying to figure out when is giving that person advice appropriate or not?" Because then I know, you know, Ploni Almoni is looking into buying a house. And it turns out that that house has X, Y, and Z problems. And I know about them. Well, if I give him advice, am I violating the principle of Lashon Hara by speaking badly about somebody else? Or what about somebody who's going to work for someone and I know something about their potential employer, etc.? So the Chafetz Chaim, the whole Sefer here is about the principles of Lashon Hara and Rechilus and Motzi Shemra. There are a lot of, he quotes many, many violations. When we speak badly, it's bad news. It's just bad news. And there are a lot of different violations. Right? One thing is called Lashon Hara. Lashon Hara is when I speak badly about someone. Then there's another thing called Rechilus. Let's take, Paul, can I invite you to join this Rechilus for a second? Is that okay?
It's a trick question.
Well, okay.
You want some advice?
Dave, can I get you into this Rechilus for a second? So if I tell you that Paul, this is not actual, it's just for theatrical purposes. If I told you that Paul is a jerk, so then that would be Lashon Hara. It'd be Lashon Hara.
So obviously...
Right, but that's why I chose Paul. For example.
Nobody would believe it.
Right, but here, that's one thing if I told you that. But let's say I said that you owned a cat and Paul last week shot your cat with a BB gun. And I said that to you. Now, that's not Lashon Hara, that's Rechilus. Because that's... A rochel is a peddler. So someone goes around peddling tidbits of information that cause people to dislike each other. So the first case, what I said to you about Paul, there's no specific reason that you should dislike him, except for the fact that you like people who are nice, you're not going to hang around with him, because if you knew he was a jerk, which obviously is not the case, but you know. But in the second case, if you actually did kill his cat with a BB gun, I just made that up, then he would have something against you. That's not just Lashon Hara. That's Rechilus. That's being a rochel, being a gossip monger. So here are some of these issues. These are not exactly the same, but both of them are prohibited. Both of them are absolutely prohibited midaraisa.
Does it matter whether he actually did or not? Does that change whether it's Lashon Hara
or
Rechilus?
Yeah, it changes also. There's a difference between Lashon Hara and Motzi Shemra, whether it's true or false. So now here comes the question. Let's say I do know something about somebody. So does that mean I can never say anything? I can never give you advice about somebody else because, right?
Yes, someone has been shooting at my cat. What can I do about it?
Excellent. So here comes the Chafetz Chaim. He tells you. He says, look. He says, I'm going to tell you, Bechlal Zeh, in this rule, I'm going to explain to you, Ktsas Yevuar, Ktsas Pratim, a couple of points, Min Lashon Hara Shebein Odom Lachaveiro, regarding Lashon Hara between people. Meaning, and exactly the case you said, someone's been shooting my cat. Im echad gaza lachaveiro, somebody stole from their friend. O ashak vekayotzibo, or withheld payment from him. O echad gaza loso o ashaka o cherfo, or somebody fashmated him, spoke about him badly, etc. Be'eza ofen muta legalus davar zeh la'anashim. In what circumstance is it permitted to reveal this to other people? So says the Chafetz Chaim. Im echad ra adam sha'asa avlo lachaveiro. If I saw someone who did something wrong to somebody else, kagon, for example, shegzolo, that he stole from him, o ashako, or he withheld money from him, o hiziko, or damaged him. Oh, I see what happened. The papers are backwards. 12 is supposed to be 11. I'm sorry, I couldn't figure out why that was there. Here we go. 12 is first. I got them backwards. 12 is 11. Whether the victims know about it, or they don't. Or he humiliated that person. Or he hurt his feelings. Or abused him verbally. Now, and the witness knows for sure, he didn't return the stolen object. He didn't pay for the damage that he had done for him. He didn't express remorse and ask for his mechila. Even if he saw this by himself, he's allowed to tell this to other people. Kedei lazer la'asher osham lo uleganos hamaisim haroim b'fnei abrios, to help the person who is the victim. Ach, says the Chavetz Chaim, yizor shelo yachsru eila shiva pratim shenevarim b'samach. But there are seven conditions that are required before you go tell people what happened. So he explains them. And this is going to be, he has another place where he talks about the same question about, you know, giving advice to somebody who is a potential employer, etc. It's a similar concept. Says the Chavetz Chaim, seven things. Number one, ve'elohein, aleph, sheyire ze hadavar ba'atzmo. You have to see it for yourself. Ve'lo ayedei shmiya me'achirim. It can't just be, you know, the rumor mill, or they used to say in Europe, mikveh talk, an Erev Shabbos. You know, that's not enough. If you didn't see it yourself, you have to make sure, you have to investigate to know for sure that it came true. By the way, we all know, as we're going along with this, how dangerous this kind of information could be to someone's livelihood, to somebody's shidduch, to somebody's friendship, to somebody's family. So that's what Chavetz Chaim says. First of all, you got to know it's true. You have to do, either you have to see it with your own eyes, or you have to investigate it. Number one. Beis, sheyizoher ma'od shelo yachlit tekef es ha'inyan bedaito legozel va'oshek o lehezek u'kayotze b'zeh. You have to think very carefully. Don't rush to judgment to say that such a thing is gezel or oshek or hezek, damage or theft. You know, somebody, they see somebody going out of my garage carrying my barbecue grill. So should they call the police and say they saw someone stealing my barbecue grill? Exactly. Maybe I lent it to them. Maybe they're making a barbecue. They need an extra barbecue grill. What are you going to automatically say you saw somebody going and I was out of town? So what? I was out of town. Maybe they texted me and asked me for my barbecue grill. You know, sometimes this happens a lot in families. You know, someone calls or someone doesn't call and immediately everybody's up in arms, though they said or they didn't say. Maybe we need to do a little bit more investigation before we rush to judgments, says the Chavetz Chaim. That's number two. Rak yizbonein es heitev es etzem ha'in. You have to look very carefully. Imu al pi din b'chlal gezel ohezek. If it's actually theft, maybe it's not theft in the first place. Gimel, sheyochiach es hachote mitchila. First thing he says is, you have to confront the accuser. Again, assuming this is possible. Go to 11. And he says it, Beloshon Raka, with a soft voice. Right? There's a conflict in the family. So instead of getting on the horn and really letting him have it, so the Chavetz Chaim says, before you start making any public statements, you need to speak to the person, Beloshon Raka, in a soft manner. Ula yucha lahoalo, v'yeta v'yizeze es derachav. And you know what? Maybe that can mend the fence. Speak to him softly. Approach the person. V'im lo yishma lo, if he doesn't listen, oz yodia l'rabim es ashma so ish hazem ma shehizid al re'ehu. Then you can expose that information. Now, parentheses, he says, you have to know also some kind of people, unfortunately, you know they won't ever listen to you. You know from your experience, even if you speak it to them softly, even if you have somebody who's close to them speak to them, then he says, I'll speak about that in a different chapter. Number four, Dalid. Here's another challenging aspect of this when it comes to Shelo Yagdil Ha'avla Yosemi Mashehi. Don't exaggerate it. It is what it is, nothing more. Number five, hey, another difficult challenge. Sheyechavein Litoelis. You should have a constructive purpose in mind. Just to go around telling things that were done by coworkers or family members or friends or acquaintances, what's the point of that? Says the Chavetz Chaim, it's only permitted, it's only mutter to tell people this and this happened if it's l'toeles, if it's for the constructive purpose of its intent. V'lo lehonos chas v'shalom me'apagama u'shu nosim b'chaveiro. And not just to impugn someone else's character. Let's say I'm running for office, so I have a great piece of information. I'm going to expose this about the other guy, and by that means, I'm going to run for office and win. So that's not a toelis. That's just a smear campaign. That's just tearing him down.
It doesn't happen here.
No, right. And not because you hate the person's guts from before. All right, this is a very tall order to check off all these things. Six, number six.
Im yuchal l'sabev es hatoeles hazoz gufa be'etza acheres. Maybe there's some other way, says the Chavetz Chaim, to achieve the goal that you want without shelo yitzarech l'saper es inyan aloshen hazahara ze'olav. Maybe there's some way, somebody comes to ask you about this person, there's some way that you can get the point across without having to speak badly about that person. There's some way, or like in a family, you can mend that breach without having to go down the road of throwing in the kitchen sink, of going back to the whole thing. Ozai says, B'chol gavni asa l'saper. And in that way, it is forbidden to tell it, because you could have achieved your goal of giving the person the good advice in some other way. And this happens occasionally. You know, someone comes to ask you for, you know, a reference for something. So sometimes there are ways to communicate without having to, and I'm sure most of the people in this room have done this in one way or another, and I'm sure everybody has more experience than I have in this area. You know there are ways to communicate a message without having to put all the Lashon Hara on the table. And then the final thing he says is, Shelo yesubav al yedei hasipur hezek lanidon yoser mikafi hadin shehaya yotze ilu huat olav ba'ofen azeh al davar zeh bevezdin. You have to be careful that the collateral damage of your reporting this information should be no worse than if it had been proven in a court of law. Meaning, if you took the person to Beis Din, people would know about it. It'd be on the public record, right? Anytime anybody gets arrested by the Skokie Police Department, it's public record, right? If I got arrested, you could find that out in the newspaper or online for sure, right? They publish it. So I have to be careful that it's not a secret. If I tell someone, it's going to be known. But if in the way that I tell someone, and this sometimes happens, then when somebody exposes something, it's blown up into such a manner that the collateral damage is much worse than it would have been had it come out in a court of law. Because the way that it's told, or the context in which it's told, the manner in which it's told, all of a sudden it becomes a huge tahram, whereas if it would have been packaged in a different way, it wouldn't have been quite as bad. So I would say these are some of the different ways to think about giving advice. It's important to give advice, but giving advice, especially when it comes at the expense of somebody else, needs to be done with a very important calculation and a calibration of what the effect of it is and what the other means are to getting it. So to summarize, we had four observations. The first one was the caution of the Gladys Kravitz model, not minding too much of other people's business because of the potential of Ayin Hara. On the other hand, the obligation to help people of Ahashivosulu and to give them good advice. On the other hand, the danger of, if you give somebody bad advice, the violation of Lifnei Iver, and the question of if somebody comes to you for advice when you do need to give them constructive advice, making sure that you craft the advice that you give them in such a way that it doesn't run afoul of the Chavetz Chaim's criteria for what is appropriate speech and what doesn't violate Lashon Hara. So no individuals were meant to be harmed in the process of this year. And I only have the highest regard for these two gentlemen. All right? Have a great day. Yashar Koach.